Hello, everyone. This is Don Jurgler, and welcome to the Insuring Cannabis Podcast, a bi-monthly trip into the intersection of two industries that couldn't be more different. Let's talk about CBD. That's short form for cannabidiol, a chemical compound from the cannabis sativa plant, or marijuana for you old-timers. In highly oversimplified terms, the cannabis plant is made up of two main components, CBD and THC. CBD is considered a non-psychoactive portion of the plant, though again, that's being overly simplistic. CBD is being used in a wide assortment of products, from oils and creams to beverages and edibles, and has been promoted for its potential to do everything from curing cancer to easing joint aches to helping with stress. But while it's considered less potent than its stony cannabis cousin THC, CBD may actually be the riskier relative. The folks at the law firm of Wilson Elser, which has a considerable cannabis practice, have been tracking nearly a dozen major CBD-related class action lawsuits, as well as a handful of legal actions against some CBD companies that have advertised that their CBD products were THC-free, yet plaintiffs who used those products reportedly failed drug tests at work and were subsequently fired. The Federal Trade Commission, in a matter that's being closely watched by the industry, recently commenced a legal action against the CBD company for falsely advertising its CBD products. In fact, a regulatory haze that hovers over the cannabis industry as a whole, it's a controlled substance in the eyes of the federal government, while it's legal in a growing number of states, is a big factor in several of these lawsuits. I recently spoke with Ian Stewart, chair of the Cannabis and Hemp Law Practice in the Los Angeles office of Wilson Elser, about the risk for these companies and those who insure these companies in the CBD space.
What we've seen over the last couple years is that both from a civil tort exposure and from a regulatory exposure, CBD is a riskier venture at this point in time than highly regulated THC marijuana commercial activity. There are fewer lawsuits involving THC than CBD, and there's actually fewer regulatory violations at both the state and federal level regarding THC companies versus CBD companies.
Stewart says that one position at the heart of more than a few of these lawsuits is that CBD is broadly illegal at the federal level.
They've been brought against all sorts of different types of products, both ingestible products and also some topicals and supplements. And the cases tend to rely on warning letters. And certainly after the FDA has sent rounds of warning letters, which they've done periodically over the last few years, you'll almost inevitably see some of these lawsuits that are filed against those companies that have received the warning letters. The allegations tend to be either that the company has made health or disease claims in relation to the CBD, or that the label is misstated in terms of the concentration of CBD, or that there's a contamination, for example.
Jesse Parenti, Programs Director for Roseville, California-based Nine Point Strategies, a specialty division of PFC Insurance that provides risk management and insurance services for the cannabis industry, has seen firsthand the challenges of insuring businesses that specialize in CBD products.
What I will say the challenge we're having is that you have CBD under the FDA that is unregulated and not required to be tested. And this is what's creating the problem. Because everyone is talking about, is CBD legit versus it being actually nothing? And the biggest challenge you have is any CBD that is coming from industrial hemp, if it is not being tested for purities, then there is no consistency on what you're seeing on the shelf. And that is probably the biggest concern with anything you see on from the main drug stores to the grocery stores, even the local stores, seeing CBD on the shelf. If you took 20 bottles, I can almost guarantee that not all 20 bottles are the exact same consistency. And the only reason of that is because they're not being tested. The positive of this is that you have other markets like California that have CBD that is being extracted from cannabis plant, and it's also being tested. These two areas are the buckets of where CBD falls. When it is a standard market, there is a couple carriers that will offer coverage. The challenge is that the gray we're talking about, because it's not being tested, I have not had someone test their contracts. We have experienced it on the cannabis side, because they are actually a tested product and we know the coverages and the warranties stand up. So that's really the challenge within the CBD space is it tested or is it not? And then if it's tested, we're finding coverage is quite easy. If it's not tested, there's only a couple carriers, and I do not have enough case study to determine how the carriers are determining on claims management at this point.
When you talk to professionals in this space, you hear another acronym often uttered alongside CBD, and that's FDA. The current position of the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, which maintains regulatory oversight of food, cosmetics, drugs, and other products, is that THC and CBD are not allowed in foods or supplements. That is based primarily on the drug exclusion rule. For CBD, that is due to Epidiolex, a CBD treatment for seizures, having been approved as a drug. The FDA thus far has enforced this position through warning letters, but it has not completed formal rulemaking that pertains to any cannabinoid. Keep in mind, warning letters are guidance documents that do not have the same force of law that final rules have. The FDA has slowly made some progress towards clarity, and an FDA report card on CBD product sampling study is due out sometime around June. Bills in Congress have also put some pressure on the FDA, but Congress to date has taken no specific action that would otherwise force the FDA's hand. Given the current lack of enforcement at the federal level, CBD's legal status often comes down to each state's position on it. But for states like Colorado, for instance, which have allowed CBD in foods and supplements under state law with certain labeling and testing restrictions, that doesn't mean those products don't violate FDA guidelines. They do. Thus, various CBD class action lawsuits going on out there assert liability under state consumer protection statutes based on the FDA's conclusion that CBD in foods or other supplements violates the drug exclusion rule. And because the FDA's rulemaking process hasn't been completed, the courts are hesitant to prematurely create potentially inconsistent rulings around the country, according to Stewart, who is holding out hope that the FDA will soon step up.
So the FDA has actually made a bit of progress over the last year. As you may know, the FDA held a public hearing last May, so a year ago, and solicited public comments and feedback and research papers, and they opened up a public docket to gather that information. And then subsequent to that, last fall, the Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell, introduced an amendment to an appropriations bill that would require the FDA to fast-track guidance, including what's called enforcement discretion, potentially. Enforcement discretion means that the FDA is going to, use its rulemaking authority to allow CBD and consumer products, despite maybe not having all of the information that they would like to have on its safety and efficacy. And then in January, a bill was introduced in the House by Representative Peterson that seeks to include hemp-derived CBD from the definition of dietary supplement under the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetics Act. So things are happening in Congress, and this has pushed the FDA to move perhaps faster than it would otherwise like. And the FDA did issue a report to Congress in March, and it was interesting. So that report indicates that the FDA is continuing to maintain a fairly hands-off approach with regard to CBD and cosmetics and topicals, but it really hasn't shifted its position on CBD in foods or food additives or drugs. What it did do, however, is it shifted or it signaled an intent perhaps to allow in some form CBD in dietary supplements. And the report specifically recognizes the FDA's authority to create an exemption through its own rulemaking process. It continues to focus on some of the unresolved safety issues. And it's also worried about what happens if it allows CBD in a number of consumer products and these products take off, and that impacts the FDA's overall, ability to provide effective oversight over the industry. If all of the agency's time and efforts are dedicated to policing CBD, how is that going to impact all of its other duties? I think they're worried about that as well. So the report indicated a few next steps. One of them is that they're going to create conduct a sampling study of CBD products on the market and issue a further report to Congress in June. That may be delayed because of the coronavirus disruptions, but at some point they will be releasing that report. And they will also, for the first time, look at different forms of CBD in products. So, you know, whether a CBD product contains what's called CBD isolate, which is the crystalline sort of pure form of CBD where all the other plant material is stripped away, versus what we call the spectrum products, full spectrum or broad spectrum CBD products, which is an oil-based product that contains the full assortment of cannabinoids that are naturally occurring in the hemp plant. Now, some of these seed cultivars that are now being planted contain fairly high concentrations of CBD, and the FDA is concerned about some of these very high CBD hemp varieties that are now being harvested. So these are what the FDA is looking like right now in terms of regulation of dietary supplements. I think that enforcement ultimately is probably going to look something like the FDA using its enforcement discretion, saying, okay, you can go ahead and put CBD in dietary supplements as long as those products are marketed as supplements. There's probably going to be a concentration limit of some type, where below that limit, the product would probably be allowed to be marketed as a supplement, but above that limit, it would become a drug or an unapproved supplement. And you're probably going to have some mandated consistent use of terminology for consumers. You'll probably have mandated labeling requirements, mandated testing requirements, things like that. So that's sort of what we're expecting to see. When that may happen is anybody's guess, but that's what we're looking at.
Let's get into what CBD is, what it isn't, and what it potentially can do for us. I recently posed the boneheaded question, what the heck is CBD, to Bonnie Goldstein, MD, the medical director for Canna Centers Wellness and Education, and a medical advisor to the website weedmaps.com. She also has a new book coming out in September, Cannabis is Medicine, published by Little Brown Spark.
So when we talk about CBD, we're talking about cannabidiol, the non-intoxicating compound in the cannabis plant, also found in the hemp plant. So again, let's talk real quick about what the difference is when we talk about cannabis versus hemp. Hemp is a form of cannabis. So when you think about cannabis as the umbrella term, and then we have varieties. So there's a drug variety that is usually thought of as the high THC variety. And then there's the fiber variety, which is what most people refer to as hemp. The fiber variety puts all its energy kind of into the stalk and fibers. The drug variety plant puts all its energy into building a big flower. And what's found inside the flower are all these compounds called cannabinoids and terpenes and flavonoids, all these medicinal, robust compounds. When we look at the hemp plant, the fiber variety, it does make CBD, but it makes a very tiny amount of CBD compared to the drug variety.
When you're talking about CBD, you also hear the word hemp a lot. Hemp-derived CBD is sourced from industrial hemp plants, grown for their fiber and seeds. Hemp is differentiated from marijuana by its levels of THC. U.S. law says a hemp plant must contain no more than 0.3% THC. Goldstein isn't a big fan of that black and white definition.
If I test my medical marijuana plant and it tests at 0.29% by weight THC, I can package it up and sell it under the hemp laws. If it tests at 0.31%, then I have to call it medical marijuana and go through the Bureau of Cannabis Control that's here in California and so on. And then it's a medical marijuana and I have to jump through all the hoops that they've set up. And is really there any difference between a 0.29 and a 0.31? No, of course not. They're going to be very similar in terms of their THC content. That's a margin of error right there that's acceptable in a lab. So it's important that people understand that, as far as I'm concerned as a physician, that I want drug variety medicine. That's why they call it drug. I use the word medicine variety. I would not use true hemp to cure my psoriasis or to help me with anxiety. Now, again, Hemp is a wonderful nutritional bonus plant. It's filled with all kinds of wonderful healthy fats and so on. So I don't throw that out. But again, to treat epilepsy, to treat other serious conditions, I would always err on the side of using a medical marijuana plant, even if it's grown low in THC. And how would you know? Well, you look at testing results and you see this nice, robust amount of other cannabinoids like CBG or CBC, cannabigerol or cannabichromine. I'd want to see some cannabinol in there, a tiny amount. I would want to see maybe some of the acids, THCA, which is tetrahydrocannabinolic acid, or CBDA, which is a raw form of CBD. So you really want, and of course, a big, robust source of terpenes. By the way, CBD by itself is the same molecule as the CBD that's found inside the medical marijuana plant. It's just that studies clearly show that when CBD has a little THC and some terpenes, it seems to work better than if it's isolate or isolated CBD, which there's a ton of CBD isolate on the market, and there's lots of people saying, oh, you don't need the THC or whatever. Now, if you're getting drug tested, of course, you might not want the THC in there, but in terms of efficacy for serious medical conditions, I'd always go for the more robust plant that has more compounds than less compounds. So that's one thing that's important for people to understand about cannabis. The other thing is dosing matters. If you take 10 milligrams of CBD through the oral route, meaning under your tongue, or you swallow it and you ingest it, it is likely that you only absorb somewhere between 4 and 20%. So if you take 10 milligrams, that is not very much. That's basically a very tiny amount. And if you said to me, oh, it cured this and it cured that and I healed this, and I would say that's a placebo effect because you're absorbing a very, very tiny amount. Certainly, I can't know that it's a placebo effect, but that amount, when we look at studies, the studies show that large doses are needed for many conditions, again, because absorption is so low through the oral tract.
Stephen Kungsberg is in global business development at Tecan Olam USA, a medical cannabis company that also produces products in the CBD hemp line. The company received a license back in 2007 from the Israeli government that enabled it to have one of the first comprehensive medical cannabis programs in the world. It has been operating globally for a number of years now, and has sublicensed intellectual property to locations in Canada, the U.S., Australia, the European Union, as well as Korea. Kungsberg was asked how the confusion around CBD affects his company, as well as the company's risk management and insurance buying practices.
I think it's quite simple. It's a relatively new business. It's highly unregulated while also being highly regulated. The FDA has come out and effectively decided that it will regulate this space. However, it has not yet come out with final regulations. As a result, there's conflicting regulations in the states themselves. Each state, of course, is free to issue their own regulations, which are in conflict quite often with what the FDA has stated to date. The FDA has taken positions on various products within the CBD space, but has not regulated it as a whole. As a result, you might very well have products out in the marketplace that are in violation of the FDA guidelines, but are in compliance with local guidelines. So, for example, there are certain issues out there with regards to labeling, and certain issues there with regards to efficacy, and certain issues out there with regards to how the product is being marketed.
Even for a big, well-positioned operation like Tecan, the insurance buying experience as a whole has been a bit tough going, especially early on, and has been made tougher by the regulatory ambiguity. About 3 years ago, Tecan was in search of directors and officers insurance.
And we found it took me a full year to get underwritten before I was able to find a proper policy. A lot of the, underwriters in the space were, rightly cautious. I mean, we were dealing with an illegal product and still are. It has gotten much better, though. I am able to get coverage for my products at the moment, and my business in particular is quite special. We don't actually produce the product itself. We tend to work with local licensed partners within a state that produces the product for us, or we buy our hemp CBD from a quality a biomass producer, and then label our product according to our specific SOPs. As a result, at least in the CBD space, we have found it easier to get insurance. In other words, we have more willing brokers out there, and then that's one thing we are not lacking for is brokers wanting to speak with us.
Parenti has also found that placing D&O for his cannabis clients hasn't been easy, and he says the pending lawsuits won't help things much.
This is a bigger and bigger concern for all aspects of CBD and cannabis, because you have millions, if not billions, of dollars coming into this industry, and directors and officer insurance is more and more needed every day because people are now requesting funding or getting subsidies, and in the process of their board of directors, the ones making decisions that have financial effects. So if they make a wrong decision, there could be a lawsuit, and this is the only coverage that can be. And it's getting more and more expensive every day because you have companies moving very, very fast and in some ways recklessly. And in the process of you're seeing large claims, and it's what's making the big press for these larger brands. And the D&O, or directors and officer insurance, is the number one hit.
While Parenti is keeping a sharp and hopeful eye out for when some of the regulatory fog surrounding CBD clears, he's just as worried about the consumer confusion around CBD and some of the businesses out there trying to take advantage of the buzz, if you will, that's feeding interest in CBD.
We really are very clear, and anyone we're working with, that we know what their marketing, what their intentions are, what their product is, because it's required for underwriting. And then any companies, I mean, the bigger challenge that we've seen is the companies that are actually making a lot of these statements are actually not coming from the United States. They're coming from Canada or Europe. And it's due to this new unregulated market. And you're already starting to see the FDA and other government bodies actually making statements and, more importantly, making claims saying that this is not true. Like, we're even starting to see that CBD is now a solution for COVID. There's no scientific fact for that, but people are trying to take advantage of it because of fear. So that's really, for us, we're really more on the facts, and we know what is and isn't. And for us, if you're going to make a claim, you're going to have to prove it. Because if you can't prove it, the insurance carrier is not going to defend it.
Well, there you have it. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Insuring Cannabis Podcast. You can find other episodes from this series by visiting insurancejournal.tv. Until next time, I'm Don Gerler.